Well, today is the first day of the legislative session in Albany for 2021, and that means the first day for newly elected State Senator Jeremy Cooney. He said last night that if Georgia elects two Democrats to the United States Senate, it will have a wide-ranging effect across the country, including here in New York. That would make the Senate a 50-50 split with Republicans and Democrats, leaving Vice President-elect Kamala Harris to break any ties. We asked the new state senator, Jeremy Cooney, to explain what he thinks the significance is of what just happened in Georgia. And it does, by the way, look like both Democrats are winning. Raphael Warnock has already been declared the winner. John Ossoff comfortably now ahead and looking like he will end up ahead enough to avoid even a recount. Jeremy Cooney took some time for connections before checking in Albany for his first day.
Great to be back on your show, Evan.
You have already made clear that you think what happened in Georgia is not just a story about Georgia or the U.S. Senate. It's a story about what happens next for states like New York. Tell me about that.
That's absolutely correct. You know, I was watching CNN like so many others last night and watching my social media feeds, and I was thinking, gosh, if the Democrats can pull this off, it's going to be a game changer for New York State. But then I sat back and thought, geez, this is bigger than New York. This is national, obviously, but even international. This is huge, the impact that the switching of the chamber to under Democratic control is gonna have for all of us. But clearly, you know, my mind is on New York and making sure that we are providing the best services that we can to families here in Rochester, but also to making sure that our small businesses across New York have the support that they need to recover coming out of this pandemic. So what happened in Georgia last night will have a ripple effect, and actually it's one of these situations where it's going to come pretty quickly. We're going to have a change in the Senate. We're going to have a new president, a new vice president in just a few days, a new cabinet quickly thereafter. And then, you know, we're going to be able to talk to our partners in federal government to make sure that New Yorkers get what they need.
I guess I want to ask how certain you are that with the Senate where it's going to be, it looks like 50-50 with Vice President Harris breaking the ties, how inevitable it is that there will be more support for states that people like Governor Cuomo have been calling for weeks, for months now. And not just support for states, but enough that, you know, that we won't have to see draconian cuts to the Rochester City School District and other services and allowing you and the legislative body to do what you want to do.
Well, I think you have to look at it two ways. One, I think you're going to see an increase in federal services. This is a priority of now incoming Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, a proud New Yorker. And, you know, whether that's about stimulus checks to families, whether that's supporting our arts and cultural organizations, whether that's making sure that there's more PPP dollars for employers and businesses, all of that on the federal level is going to have an impact here on the state level, because if they take care of people on the national side, right, we're going to have to do less cleaning up, let's say, on the state level. So that's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it, which I think you were referring to, Evan, is what does a state and local government aid package look like? Remember that Senator McConnell, Mitch McConnell, called it a blue state bailout and refused to include such an aid package in the last COVID relief bill, which was absolutely ridiculous and totally irresponsible, because it's not just about what a, you know, voter demographics are for New York or Kentucky or Florida or California, right? It's about making sure that our counties, our cities are healthy, making sure that our people have the services that they need during an incredibly difficult time. So without that rhetoric of a blue state bailout, I'm confident that the new United States Senate will make sure that will recognize first that state and local governments are facing huge budget crises just because we have, you know, decreased revenue from income tax, sales tax, fees, all the revenue structures that local governments and state governments depend on. And I'm very hopeful that they'll try to fill that that budget gap and recognize that we are already struggling with unemployment, especially here in New York. 1.3 million state and local jobs have already been lost since March of 2020. So, you know, we need to make sure that our federal partners know that. I know that locally here in Monroe County, Congressman Morelli has been an advocate for this. The governor, as you mentioned, has been an advocate for this. And the Senate, the state Senate, will certainly continue in that tradition.
What do you think the lessons are for anyone who runs a campaign anywhere in the country in any political party? What are the lessons from Georgia? What are the lessons from Stacey Abrams?
Well, I was going to say, first, have Stacey Abrams on your side. Because, you know, I think of all the press and attention that she has received, all well-deserved, I would say, what really struck me, if you think back even just a week ago, she spent time going into barbershops. She spent time walking down the street. Of course, nicer weather in Georgia than it is here in upstate. But, you know, she spent time out doing the work, making sure that people were educated and informed about their rights to vote and that they had the tools to be able to do it. I'm thinking back, I think it was 2019, when our U.S. Congress passed H.R. 1, which was to create a lot of the voting rights package, right, that would enact voter registration, same-day registration, online registration, all these things. And then the Senate, the U.S. Senate, failed to pass it. So, you know, I think these voting reforms are so important. We've done a very good job here at the state level in New York in making sure that people are equipped to vote. But the lesson to be learned is that every vote counts. And if you know, if you were up late last night and watching Steve Kornacki or John King or whomever you were tuned into when there was a new envelope of votes opened up in these various counties of Georgia, I think I learned more about Georgia counties than I've ever knew of my life last night. But you would see the numbers. We're so close, 465 votes, 2,000 vote difference, right? Warnock's up, John Ossoff is about to come up, right? It was really exciting, but behind those numbers are people. And for everyone who was able to vote or felt empowered to vote, it really made a difference. And it, like I said in the very beginning, it changed the course of our history, not just for the United States Senate, but for our world. And that is the lesson to be learned.
All right, one more question for you, and I know you are, jumping into session number one? Is this the first?
Yes, in just a couple of hours, we're going to gavel in, and this will be the first day of the New York State Legislature, and historically will be the first time that the Democrats have achieved a supermajority in the New York State Senate, and a very exciting day for Rochester and Monroe County, because not only am I joining the Senate majority, but my dear friend and colleague, Senator Summer Brook, is joining from the east side of Monroe County. So we have two new representatives for our region going to Albany, at least virtually. You know, with the pandemic, we're trying to stay safe. But we will be there and be present and be part of making sure that Rochester gets what it needs finally from New York State.
So the last question regarding Rochester then is, as I mentioned RCSD, the governor said, you know, months ago, without the federal government stepping up and providing help during the pandemic for states and you know, sort of by extension, local governments who don't have the ability to deficit spend and who are in serious, serious trouble because of the pandemic, the governor was talking about cuts across the board, 10%, 20%. And, you know, for months, the narrative has been, yes, across the board. And that could mean, you know, millions upon millions of dollars more cuts for a district like the Rochester City School District. There was debate on the state level, Senator Cooney, about, you know, whether that was fair or whether that was wise, whether even in a pandemic there could be some level of discretion for the cuts. What's likely to happen now for RCSD, given what happened in Georgia?
Well, let me just say I am deeply connected to this issue as a graduate of the Rochester City School District. I'm the first graduate of RCSD to serve in the state Senate in almost 30 years. And my wife, Diane, and I live in the city today. So this is a deeply personal issue to us. I'll tell you what, 1% cut is too much. When you have the level of poverty that we have in our city, and you know that the Rochester City School District have been overlooked for far too long, we can't afford any more of these cuts. We have kids who don't have access to the technology services. We have teachers who are frustrated because they can't reach their students. We're trying to do the hybrid model that some of our suburban counterparts have been fortunate enough to try over the past few months. We're just starting that process in the city. But at the end of the day, and I've said this for a long time, I believe the number one investment we can make in our community is our urban school system, because if we don't create a generation of workforce for future years, we're not going to be able to maintain the population that we have in our region and keep the businesses that we have. We have to step up to the plate, and I know that my colleague, Senator Brooke, feels the same way, that education must be a priority. So, yes, there's going to be cuts. That is the reality, and no one likes to say it, but that's the truth. It's a hard time to be a New Yorker. I'm very hopeful that whatever this package looks like in the new U.S. Senate that will trickle down to us in the state legislature here in New York, now that will help. But we have the recovery or the cuts fall on the backs of the working class families of the Rochester City School District. It won't work. And we won't stand for it, and we're going to do our best to make sure that we fight for every dollar that our students and our parents and our teachers deserve.
That's New York State Senator Jeremy Cooney, who joins his colleagues for session number one, opening in just a few minutes. And they're doing it virtually, but we appreciate the time from the state senator. And now I want to bring in Nicole Hushler-Ray on the line with us, who is a longtime political consultant in Western New York and currently serving as Assemblywoman Sarah Clark's chief of staff. Nicole is someone who has been involved with campaigns that have lost close ones, won close ones, won some big ones. And she's with us now. Nicole, welcome back to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I couldn't help but notice on various social media platforms you had a celebratory mood last night watching Georgia. Yeah, and you're laughing now. It's a good day, I guess, for Democrats.
It was worth getting very little sleep, and I think a lot of us, even though we got very little sleep last night, are feeling super charged up today. So could not be happier with the results. That's for sure.
Could we talk about the fact that there were some counties who were like, "Yeah, we're gonna shut down counting at 11 and go to bed, and we'll be back tomorrow." I'm staying up. What are you doing in your county? That's just me. Did you feel that way? That was very strange at times.
That was a little frustrating, particularly after seeing some of the feet dragging that we had to experience in November. So you'd think after all of that, they'd have their acts together a bit. But it is a complicated numbers game, and it turned out in our favor. So ultimately, I have no complaints. But yeah, that was a little. I got a few people were a little upset with me when I had retweeted former presidential candidate Andrew Yang's announcement that
they'd won both seats.
Won both races prior to it being officially called. And I, you know, I was like, well, I'm going to go ahead and trust the mathematician here.
the guy whose whole slogan is math. Yeah.
Right. And he was alluding to being in the war room. And I've been in those rooms crunching those numbers with very refined formulas and spreadsheets. And, certainly, they're never perfect, but it felt like a safe gamble last night.
Yeah, I mean, at one point, it just became clear that that both Ossoff and Warnock were actually outperforming by a little bit, outperforming Joe Biden's results, and the Democratic turnout was a little bit higher than the Republican turnout vis-a-vis November. So when you put all of those together, and Joe Biden won Georgia, it was clear that both the Democrats running for Senate were going to win their races. And that's what we've seen. And so I want to ask you, first of all, what the number one lesson you take from this is, given the fact that you have run campaigns, you've run for office yourself, you've run campaigns for others. What's the first lesson that comes out of Georgia?
I think the biggest one, and I noted I wrote down several bullet points, but for me, the biggest one, and particularly when you are facing an uphill battle that requires, you know, reform at the grassroots level, right? And not just using the infrastructure available to you, but, you know, engaging an electorate or registering voters that have been in years past disenfranchised or just left behind by the party. And that message is, and that I think Stacey has truly taught us, as well as countless other Black women across the state of Georgia, as well as locally, but we can get into that later, is to be resilient. Grit and resiliency is something that can be learned. I've definitely learned that over the years, and it requires some practice, but it's, I think the real focus of it needs to be on not responding to the naysayers or, you know, the very, very artful politicians that often in the establishment who fear change or fear a loss of power and control. And, you know, if the more shots that are being taken at you, the higher the likelihood is that you are making a strong impact. So, you know, keeping your head above water and really, you know, focusing on the long game, the fact that this is almost always a marathon, not a sprint, mm-hmm. which is very difficult. That's a very difficult balance to keep on the campaign trail because it's often dumpster fire mode and, you know, flying by the seat of your pants. So be resilient and remind yourself that real change will always be preceded by some rough terrain and several shots being taken at you.
Well, and Nicole, part of what's so impressive about what Stacey Abrams and the team has done in Georgia is they have turned the state purple and purple blue now, when a lot of the dynamics for many years were running against Democrats in that state. And, you know, you're someone who has helped lead campaigns in areas that were sort of politically aligned against your candidate. And what you try to do is you try to work one by one to flip votes, to get to know people. But here's what I kind of want to delve into with you. We actually see the polling in these Georgia races being really good. Most of the polls in this country for years have been really good, except for polls that involve Donald Trump. I mean, there is a Donald Trump phenomenon. But when he's not in the race that's being polled, the polls have been good. The polls were pretty much dead on in Georgia. But what that means, Nicole, is that days before this election, when the Washington Post publishes the tape of the president of the United States trying to shake down the Secretary of State of in Georgia, I mean, to me, that's a national emergency moment. That's not a, oh, he's going golfing and he's being a little immature about the election result. He's telling somebody directly, you need to come up with these votes for me. That's your job. You're a Republican. You serve me. Go get these votes. Find them. That should horrify us. And meanwhile, the candidates in Georgia, the Republicans, supported him, didn't blink, didn't have a problem with that, didn't have a problem saying that they would not support the certification, and it didn't move the polls. It just didn't matter to voters. Those developments in the last few days didn't move people. So I guess this is a two-part question. Should that bother us? It bothers me, and this is not a Democrat-Republican thing. I don't want anybody calling anybody to shake them down looking for votes, no matter what party you're from. It didn't bother voters. Does it bother you? And what does move voters? How do you get voters to go from voting for years for one party and then deciding to go vote for another party?
You know, it's such a, for a lot of people, it is such a, and I have to remind myself all this time because I, you know, when Donald Trump was first elected, I was understandably angry and not, really, on a personal level, judging people that voted for him. And I, at this point now, I openly judge people that still support him. But back then, you know, I think it required some pause to begin to understand how we got to where we were and why people were making the decisions that we were. And while, you know, people like me vote for much more broad-based reasons, like what is good for the overall community? What is going to lift us all up versus, you know, the sort of one issue, the single issue voters, which there are a lot more of them out there than I think either party appreciates. And, you know, the sort of, as I call them, stage five clinger Trump supporters at this point, there really isn't an issue, right? It's not as if the Republican Party has any vision or any plan for reform, right? It's sort of just this desperate attempt to hold on to power. And while that's keeping, you know, some of these Trump protesters in the streets demanding that the election results were fraudulent, it clearly is not keeping the other, you know, the sort of medium Republican voters engaged. It's, if anything, I'm sure it kept some of them home, and that definitely blew up in the face of the Republicans in Georgia, I think, because, you know, if you think that your vote doesn't count or that it's not going to matter because at the end of the day, you know, the Democrats are just going to steal the election, why are you going to bother showing up to vote? Right. So there needed to be a stronger presence and conversation there. And I think it was definitely a failure on their part to not recognize how that was going to impact them at the end of the day. But by the same token, I agree with you wholeheartedly in that I consider it a national emergency. I think the results last night are hopefully going to help start to smoothen out the transition of power. But, you know, there isn't enough conversation on the national level, particularly from the Democratic Party, on what's at stake here. Trump could, you know, all it takes is one supreme sociopathic narcissist to decide he's not going to leave office. And there's, you know, while we say there are mechanisms in place to ensure that there is a smooth transition of power, this is unprecedented in the United States. But what I wanted to get back to, because I don't want to give that too much power in terms of why the results were the results last night, simply because I think it underestimates really the long-term movement that got us here today and sort of undervalues the efforts of people like Stacey Abrams, and also feeds into, you know, we should be reexamining some of the one-liners we heard out of the National Democratic Party and certain career politicians just after the November elections, which was, oh yes, House, the National Party failed in terms of House elections across the country because of progressives like AOC. That sort of fear-mongering. And, you know, it's, if there's anything that the Georgia results should tell us, it's that voters don't care if you're labeled a socialist or a radical liberal, right? They want real change.
Well, you're going to get labeled that anyway.
Exactly. You're going to get labeled that anyway. And it's, you know, the fear-mongering just isn't cutting it anymore. And it's, For any you know, establishment Democrat who had that sort of middle of the road approach, you're seeing their win margins shrink more and more. So, you know, the lesson I see from that is you have to lean into change. You have to stand for something and be bold. You know, these aren't meant to be career positions. These are mass job interviews, you know. So,
well, we'll see if they go big or go home. Now the door is open for that. Nicole Hushleray, longtime political consultant. Great talking to you as always. Let's talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Evan.
More connections coming up.